I think all of us fall into the trap that life is really busy and it's hard to manage, and we need to be better at knowing where our boundaries are. Am I wrong or am I right? Or am I wrong or am I right? Right, wrong, right, wrong? No? All right. You know, life is pretty much like treading water and keeping sane. But I do believe that God doesn't want us to live life like that. But he wants us to be rather fruitful and faithful in the time and the resources that we have. So what I see our group here, we have a blend of parents, newly married, single working professionals, and also college students, that we all have this issue. It's not exclusive to just a certain life stage, but it's a life problem that we want to figure out and solve. So I want to introduce to you guys Dr. Eric Choi. I met him last night. He's a deacon at Christ Central Southern California, and he is a doctor. So if anybody knows how demanding work, family, and church could be, he's our man. And I'm not saying that he's mastered it, but maybe he could share a little bit on how he's able to function and manage in all the areas of life that he's responsible for. So this is our last session, and I hope that we will be blessed and attentive, but also to just know how we could do this better. All right, well, would you welcome Dr. Eric Choi.
All right, it's a real pleasure to be here. When Pastor Harold requested that I participate in CCN, first and foremost, I was very honored, but secondarily, I was very surprised because he never lets me speak at our own church. And I assume that's to limit the damage that I can do to just the Bay Area. You know, about 4 weeks ago at our church, we had a leadership retreat, and there's a young couple that just had a baby about 5 to 6 months ago. And my wife and I were talking to this couple. I was talking to the husband, my wife was talking to the wife, and I asked this brother, hey, how's it going with this new baby? 5 months old, it's like exciting time. Are you guys sleeping? And this brother said, things are fantastic. We're sleeping through the night. The baby's as easy as it could be. And he's just going on and on about how easy fatherhood and parenting is. And I said, no, you know, something's wrong here. This does not sound right. So I turned to his wife, who's about 4 feet away talking to my wife, and I said, hey, your husband says things are just great. You're sleeping through the night. And you could just see her jaw start to drop all the way to the floor. And she goes, what are you talking about? And they start arguing in front of us. And my wife and I just kind of slowly backed away, and we kind of walked away. And the reason I tell this story is because I hope this talk isn't this huge blind spot in my life that I'm talking about. And in preparing for this and really delving into a topic that's been very near and dear to my own heart, and really looking at this topic, which I've struggled with for the last 7 years as a practicing physician after finishing my training, I've read a lot of books, I've talked to a lot of friends, some mentors, as well as talked to my wife about this, really to uncover some of these blind spots in my life. So what I plan to do is talk about a little bit of the mindset, maybe a historical and biblical perspective about busyness and managing these three aspects of our lives, in the hopes that this can help you. This, in some ways, is very specific to my life, but I hope that the principles there can be applied to yours. Any talk about managing time and church work and family is going to talk about time management, setting priorities, and praying about that. But perhaps the ideas and the ways we think about that, I can perhaps begin to elicit in your own lives. I don't know if this is how you feel. This is how I feel sometimes in my life. We're just spinning plates and hoping they don't come shattering down, but we're never able to enjoy any of the aspects of, you know, what God has placed in our lives. Many times we want to be like this pie graph under category A, where things are in very discrete, concrete time frames, don't influence other parts of our lives, but with the responsibilities and pulls and tugs of these various portions of the pie, oftentimes our lives look more like category B. historically speaking, I wanted to give you a little bit of perspective about how we think about time and leisure. There's this Norwegian-American economist in the 19th century that talked about, and this is a mouthful, but conspicuous abstention from labor becomes the conventional mark of superior pecuniary achievement. What does this mean? It means the richer you get, the less you work. And that was a perspective in the 19th century. If you're not familiar with this economist, this is who is largely credited with coining the term conspicuous consumption. And this idea is the counterpart to that conspicuous leisure, that the more well-off we are, we can actually use this as a badge of honor, that the more we can have time for leisure. However, we know that that's not how we live our lives in the 21st century. A recent study that came out in the Journal of Consumer Research looked at how the conspicuous consumption of time is actually our badge of honor, that we say, hey, I'm so busy, I'm needed here and there. And as a result, this alternative kind of conspicuous consumption really becomes our existential mandate, the reason to be, that in a tight job market, the commodity that is me, my talents and times, are so needed that I'm needed and wanted in a way that perhaps you or someone else isn't. And this is primarily why we respond to the question, how are you, which is just an innocuous question to start a conversation with. Oh, I'm so busy, right? So in talking about this, it's an issue that I've had to wrestle with over and over again. And amongst a number of books that I've read, there are a few books that stood out for me that were very, very helpful. There's this book by Richard Swenson, who actually is a physician, that talks about this idea of margins, having buffers in our life built in to create a healthy emotional, mental, spiritual, and physical state. Kevin DeYoung writes a book, Crazy Busy, in which he talks about what are biblical principles that should drive how we control the busyness in our life. And the last book, which every speaker has mentioned, and I've mentioned here to go along with it, because it'd be, you know, a shortcoming of this talk if I didn't bring it up. Now, in beginning to delve into this question, one of the struggles that I had was a biblical one. And it's been mentioned a few times in a number of talks here, is that the Bible asks for all of us. Christ asks for our heart, mind, body, and souls. And it's this all-in type of concept. When Christ asked his disciples to come follow him, it says they follow him immediately. Someone previously mentioned Colossians 3, that when we work, we should work heartily, to the Lord's standard, not to man's standard. When we look at the poor widow that gave her two small copper coins, Christ praises her for giving everything that she had, not in her abundance, but the totality of what she had. And this concept of being all in, and yet having a finite amount of time per day, having the work pressures and family responsibilities, really to me, in the beginning when I considered this question, was a real question of how do we balance all these things. And biblically, I don't see this notion of, or at least it's not explicitly directed at explaining this notion of how do we balance these aspects in our lives. So the struggle is real. Because if we ask ourselves the question, what is a good employee? What is a good father and mother? And what is a good Christian, church member, deacon, elder, or pastor? We can fill those blanks in with a number of different terms and phrases. And oftentimes we are faced with expectations in each one of these categories that infringe upon each other, that collide and pile up, and perhaps at the end of the day, we may feel like we are doing none of these three categories very well. What is also understood is that each of these things are very, very good things, in which doing any of these things on the exterior may seem very noble or virtuous. So that was a struggle. And so what I went about doing was the process of really getting wisdom from those people around me and really delving into this issue in a more directed way. And so I asked a very basic question to the people around me and the people I trusted: when do you feel most unbalanced? And the top three answers here that I've listed came up over and over and over again. And so the rest of this talk is going to really delve into these three topics and really structured in that way. And the first one is that I feel most unbalanced when my mood is affected. I feel most unbalanced when something unexpected, unforeseen, or unplanned happens. And I feel most unbalanced when I don't have time to rest. I think we would all relate to this in one form or another. So we'll go with the first one of mood. One of my friends said, my family doesn't mind when I'm busy, but when I'm grumpy or stressed as a result from being busy, they get upset with me. I think we can all relate to this. They did a survey recently of 100 children and their parents. And the question was to the children, what is it that you would want more from your parents? Now, the parents answer for their kids as well. And it's interesting because the parents said, I think my child would say, I want more time with you. I want you to be at my recital or sporting event. I want you to be more present when you're with me. And that was the number one response of parents. However, the children said, number one, I wish mom and dad was less stressed. And then number two, I wish mom and dad could control their anger better, anger management. And those two things are somewhat related, and it's embedded in the response that my friend got, was that it wasn't so much the busyness or not being present or their parents running around and doing things. It was that when they were together, they were grumpy, stressed, angry, upset. And so it wasn't the busyness so much as it was their response to that busyness. Because we often ask the question, is busyness in itself a sin? And it's an important question to ask. Jesus was very busy. We find that Jesus was healing various diseases well after sunset into the evening. When a crowd gathered, he and his disciples didn't have the time to eat. At one point, we see in Mark 6 here that they had to escape to a boat, to a solitary place, to get some rest. But when they landed on the other side, there was still another crowd gathered to get his attention. So we know that in the perfection of who Christ was, he was very busy. So the sin itself cannot be a sin, but perhaps it's our response to that busyness, much like how the children in a survey were responding to the question of what they would want from their parents. Kevin DeYoung in his book, Crazy Busy, says, the reason we are busy is that we're supposed to be busy. That's how God created us. We know that the worst thing as gifted and talented people, we as Christians from God, giving all these gifts to us, the worst thing we can do is to forgo and avoid every difficult task that's given to us. And to really live a life that is just seeking ultimate and optimum amounts of leisure and pleasure in our lives. Now, we're called to be busy. We're called to give sacrifice and hard work. But the real question is that, how do we do that? For example, if your talent is administration, you're going to be busy. People need that type of talent. If you're creative in unique ways, you're going to be called to use your gifts in the art field. I put these pictures of my kids. This, the one on the left there, that's Noah. He's 4.5. And Sela, she's 2 going on 3. They look angelic in these pictures, but they're a handful. And the reason I put these pictures up is to remind us that, you know, babies and children are very, very good things, right? These are things that God has gifted us with, and yet we all know that if you have kids, you're going to be very busy. So it's really our response to that. And I had to ask my question in my own personal life, when is my mood most upset? Okay, so we have established that busyness is good. We're supposed to be busy. That's the creational design. But what gets us from a healthy level of busyness to being at a point where our mood is constantly upset? I do find that when I don't get enough rest, my mood is easily upset, that I'm most irritable. Interestingly, the more I thought about it, I also felt that some of my perception of how busy I was really had to do with how busy I was running around trying to control things or others that were beyond my control. So in other words, yes, I have to go to work, I have to put my hours in, I have to do this and that for my kids, but when I tried to control other things that were beyond my control, I was spinning my wheels and spending a lot of energy. And then the third thing I noticed about myself was that I had this own idolatrous assumption about things in life, is that I expected things to be easy. And that's not necessarily true, and we all know that. Knowing these three things, it began to help unfold for me how I needed to view my time and how I needed to view the things that were being requested of me and knowing my own limitations. So I wanted to introduce this concept to you guys of knowing that our time is fixed. I mean, we all know that. Why am I introducing this to you? And to share a little bit about, I thought the best way to explain this was to share a little bit about how my time was always being tugged and pulled at. So in any given month, these are the yellow dots are all the weekdays and the green dots are the weekends. And the green dots are the days that I can be off. However, as a physician, I have to take call. And so that's 24 hours a day, and that's for 7 days in a row, and at which point I can be called into hospital at any time. And most of these orange dot days where I'm on call, I'm at the hospital very late, typically anywhere from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m., so it's an entire full day. Additionally, on the Fridays before and after my call, typically when our small group community group meets for Bible study. And so those are fixed things in my life. And then about once a month, I'll have a church meeting where in the evening we'll spend about 3 to 4 hours discussing various things and envisioning and dreaming up about things for the church. So the reason I do this is it's a little simplified. There are obviously a lot of other things that my wife does, that my kids do, but at least just from the perspective of what are the fixed things every month that I know are going to take time away from family? These are the things that we saw. Well, if you look at this, I only have 6 days off, and then I only have one Friday evening available throughout the entire month. Well, that's an important point for me to realize, because although we don't think about time as being always limited, we always say, well, one more thing won't hurt. Time is fixed for us, and so there are these fixed time expenditures that we have. Much like in our budget, if you make X amount every month, you have to pay for rent, you have to pay for the bills, you have to make car payments, and those things can't be affected too much, and so we have to limit our budget, and then how we think about spending other things in our life depends on how much we have left in the bank. But oftentimes we don't think about things, we don't think about time like that. We don't say, well, how much time do I have left this month? We think that it's an unlimited supply. In addition, I had to break down, as a result of this, how I spend each day. And what I found was that, well, during the week, I wake up at 5:30, I'm at the office by 6:45, 7 in the morning, and I'm there till about 5 or 6. And before my kids go down at 7:38, I really only have a couple hours with them. So I really try to preserve that time with them. And then because I go to sleep around 10 o'clock, I really only have a couple hours to kind of unwind and then, you know, relax enough to actually fall asleep. So during the week, there isn't much family time. And I think that's pretty, I mean, I would imagine that many of us are in similar situations. And so it became all the more important as my responsibilities began to expand and grow that I realized that I needed to protect certain hours during the week or and during the day for me to be sane and be healthy. So one of the things that I did was on Saturday mornings from 8 to 12 noon, I protect that every week that I'm not working on that particular Saturday. And it's a time for me to be alone, to study, to read, prepare for church, for small group. And it's something that my wife is aware of, and it's just something that I do on a weekly basis. This may not apply to you, but to me, this is one of the things, measures that I took to really be able to do the things that I did well, yet still take care of my family and be involved in church. The second response to when I feel most imbalanced is when something unexpected or unplanned happens. In that book I talked about by Richard Swenson, he talks about this idea of margins. Every one of us has limits. No matter how fast we run, you always reach a limit. And the load that we have in our lives are all the cumulative responsibilities and things that need our attention. But it's really the delta there, the subtraction of the load from the limit that defines our margin. And every one of us has a margin, and everyone has a margin that is going to keep them healthy and content in their own lives. And so the idea here is that to be healthy, this margin needs to be included in the emotional, mental, physical, and spiritual spheres of our life. And so planning for margin really becomes planning for the unplannable. In other words, the margin has to be large enough that if something unexpected happened in our lives, we can still deal and cope with it. So it's not to the point that, hey, we increase our load just to about the edge of the limit so that we can get as much done, such that if something happened, your child comes home and has a bad day from school, that your whole world doesn't come apart and crumble. So this idea of margins, if you want to delve into this a little bit more, I would encourage you to read that book. It's the book is entirely devoted to that. But understanding these limits and our loads really does become an essential part of remaining healthy. Because chronic overloading in this book talks about how that has negative consequences in our spiritual life. Many times we think that time can be negotiable, but it isn't. And decreasing our loads is the only way that our margins stay healthy. I put this graph up. There's an exponential line and there's a linear line here. And in this book, the argument is that we live in a unique, particular time in history where progress and change changes and the expectations that are placed in our lives are growing at an exponential rate. Most of the things in our life are linear. Time is linear. The sun comes up every 24 hours. It goes down every 24 hours. And we think in linear terms, but the expectations that are placed on us are actually exponential. In other words, the growth of information, the number of websites, the volume of emails that you've been receiving, college tuition costs, cumulative inflation, all these stressors and factors in our life are growing exponentially. Understanding this point really heightens and all the more places the stress that we need to decrease our loads to actually maintain that healthy margin. I used to think earlier in my life that when you had more responsibilities, that you had to increase your limit. In other words, you had to run faster, be more efficient. But I realized that even in the pursuit of efficiency, there was a limit. And that was my limit. And at the end of the day, it makes sense, but we never think about it like this. We just need to decrease our loads. So how do we decrease those loads? Well, we have to set priorities. Kevin DeYoung in his book, Crazy Busy, talks about how we can't do it all, okay? And for us to do things well, we have to set these limits, understand our loads, and ultimately so that we can serve others effectively. A lot of times we talk about multitasking, and I just mentioned efficiency. But biologically, you know, and it's been proven over and over again, that we actually can't multitask when we have to do two things that require our mental attention. We're actually switch tasking rapidly between the two things. And so, again, highlighting the importance of understanding our limits. And then the final point he makes about priorities is that we have a grace-based approach to setting priorities. In other words, we allow others to set their own priorities, and we don't question or challenge those things as long as they are being mindful and thoughtful about their own health. So we all know this story very well. There's Mary and Martha. Martha was distracted with much serving, and to the point that she's complaining to Christ, saying, well, hey, my sister's not helping you out. Can you tell her to help me out here? And the Lord answers her, saying, Martha, Martha, you are anxious and troubled about many things, but one thing is necessary. Mary has chosen the good portion, which will not be taken away from her. The question here is that one is that, what is that one necessary, what is that one good thing? And in evaluating my own personal priorities, I really had to examine my idols. At the end of the day, our idols determine our priorities. And oftentimes our underlying our idols also have underlying assumptions. So for me, I assumed, as I mentioned earlier, that all things in life should be easy. And when they're not, I ask why. And this may be the idol of comfort for me. When I push my kids into different activities or I want my wife to do something that she doesn't want to do, perhaps that's my own selfish personal ambition. Perhaps the need to take on more things at work and the idolatry of being recognized, maybe these are certain idols that I have in my own heart. And really starting to deconstruct some of these idols helped me set some of the priorities and what are the things that I needed to take away from my life. So this idea of assumptions in our life is actually a very, very important one. And one thing that I would ask all of us to reconsider is, what assumptions do you have about your own particular life? In other words, do you have an assumption about your job that you should hit a certain income bracket? Do you have an assumption about what college or level of university your child should attend? What are these assumptions that drive you crazy busy, right? I wanted to tell this fascinating story. There's this British Christian and member of parliament from the 18th and 19th century. His name was William Wilberforce. And he wrote about progress and the virtues of society, okay, and talking about all these assumptions that we may actually have. And he said that to measure that virtue of any given society, it should be measured by the fear and love of God and of Christ. Love, kindness, and meekness toward other fellow men, and an indifference to the possession and events of this life compared with our concern about eternity, self-denial, and humility. This is very reminiscent of Colossians 3, where it talks about setting your mind on things above and not on earthly things. And on the surface, it seems like just a call to being heavenly and being a good Christian, right? But he was actually challenging a societal assumption that was going on in the British Empire at the time. When it talks about an indifference to the possession of events of this life, he's saying that, hey, in British Empire lifestyle at the time, they made certain assumptions about how they could balance their life. And what was that assumption he was challenging? Well, William Wilberforce was actually talking about slavery. In that time in Britain, slavery was maintaining the lifestyle of the rich and elite. Instead of them having to go do work, they had slaves that could do the work for them. And the notion of abolition was threatening to that lifestyle, to their work-life balance, right? It's an absurd assumption, of course, because no one today would say that we should have slavery to maintain our own work-life balance. But I bring this story up as an example of what are the particular assumptions that you have. If we were to have a heavenly perspective, if we were to be not era-specific or time-specific and be above those things, what are the certain things that we assume? Our kids have to go to a certain college. Our kids should be playing sports. I have to lead a life and a successful job in which I can achieve certain income levels or have certain worldly possessions. What are those specific assumptions that you have, and are those the things that are driving you from not just being busy, but over busy? The third question, the third answer to this question was that I don't have time for rest. And we see that Christ took very specific and very measured ways of protecting time for himself to pray and make his spiritual life a priority. And this is my last slide. And the reason I made it my last slide is at the end of the day, we all have idols, we all have assumptions, we all have differing priorities. And it's going to be very difficult for any one person to tell you how to rearrange those things. Much as how Jesus said to Martha that Mary had a focus on that one necessary thing, that one good thing, obviously at the end of the day, we have a spiritual priority to which we are called to do. How we exactly balance that, what the breakdown of time that we give to church, to work, and to family is going to look different amongst all of us. And really, unless we have a gospel-drenched life, Pastor Harold mentioned about being sunburnt, that until our lives are transformed and every facet of our life begins to be remodeled under the gospel and the changing, transforming work of God in our lives, I don't think we'll know exactly what that balance looks like, particularly for you. In Deuteronomy, when God was speaking to Moses and said that man does not live on bread alone, but by every word of God, the question and assumption there is that there is more to this world than just being fed. And in the spiritual journey that the Israelites had in the desert, God was calling them to daily come to him for provisions and for that daily measure of grace in their lives. A lot of times we're going to be busy. That's how we were designed. And at times we're going to feel stressed. And there are going to be seasons in which this balance will never be perfect. And yet, I wonder if that busyness is the fire is the desert in our lives, our spiritual desert, that calls us to really get on our knees and go to Christ for our daily measure of grace and provisions. And so I leave you with that. Perhaps I wasn't able to give you a specific answer to your question about balancing your life, but in my life, it's been a growing process, and taking inventory of my time has been an important step. But at the end of the day, we are fallen, and I think the efforts that we place and the work of the continuous work of the Spirit is, I think, what will give God the most glory in this life. So thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Eric.